Hello, Namibia. From the golden dunes of Swakopmund to the lively streets of Katimamulilo, from the proud kettle posts of Gbabes to the breezy coastlines of Rhodes, and all the way to the bustling heart of Windhoek. A very good afternoon to you, whoever you're tuning in from. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, your host, your storyteller, and your midweek energy booster, right here on Eagle FM, keeping you company up until 14:30. Now, it's Thursday, the 9th of October, 2025. And you know what that means? The weekend is almost calling, but not before we take one more deep dive into the stories shaping our nation. Now, Thursdays have that special rhythm, a mix of reflection and anticipation, a reminder that there's still room to finish the week strong, to reset, and to maybe even surprise yourself. Now, you're tuned into On The Reading News Analysis, the show where headlines meet hotlines. We don't just report the news, we unpack it, connect it, and ground it right where it matters most, with you, the people driving Namibia's story every single day. And remember, your voice is part of this dialogue and can be part of the dialogue as well. Join in on the conversation on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or WhatsApp, and connect with us through the Eagle FM website and Eagle FM app. Because here on The Reading News Analysis, your thoughts don't just matter, they move the narrative forward. So whether you're crashing in through Oshakati, grabbing lunch in Ochoarongo, working hard in Ketmanswap, or chilling at home in Rundu, thank you for choosing Eagle FM as your Thursday companion. Stay with us. Now, coming up next, we dive into these top stories and unpack what's truly on the radar for Namibia's this 9th of October 2025. Because the week might be winding down, but the conversations are just getting started. Let's jump right into these top stories. The Second Namibia Botswana Bi-National Commission, also known as BNC, convened its ministerial session on the 9th of October 2025, that is today in Windhoek, co-chaired by Selma Ashipala Musavi, Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Trade, and Dr. Theo Butale, Botswana's Minister of International Relations. Now, this high-level session brings together ministers and senior officials from both governments to review progress made in implementing bilateral agreements and to strengthen cooperation across a range of strategic sectors. Now, the BNC serves as the highest framework for bilateral engagement between the two countries, replacing the former Joint Permanent Commission on Cooperation in 2022. It aims to deepen political, economic, and social ties while ensuring effective implementation of agreements reached at the presidential level. Now, in her opening statement, Ashipala Musavi reaffirmed Namibia's commitment to advancing mutual beneficial relations with Botswana, describing the partnership as one rooted in shared history, values, and aspiration. She emphasized that both nations face similar challenges, such as limited economic diversification, youth unemployment, and climate-related pressures, but also shares significant opportunities for collaboration. Now, she underscored the need to leverage collective strengths in energy, agriculture, infrastructure development, trade, education, science and technology, tourism, culture, defense and security sectors that she said are crucial for long-term stability and sustainable development. The minister called for purposeful forward-looking discussions to build on previous successes, noting that tangible cooperation in areas such as cross-border trade, water resource management, and transport infrastructure could directly benefit communities on both sides of the border. Meanwhile, Dr. Butale highlighted that the partnership between Namibia and Botswana is backed by 47 memorandum of understanding and bilateral agreements spanning multiple fields from defense and security to education, transport and environmental management. He praised the implementation progress made so far, but urged officials to accelerate ongoing negotiations and finalize outstanding agreements during the current session. Now, Dr. Butale further revealed that 9 new instruments covering areas such as energy cooperation, scientific collaboration, correctional services, and labor mobility have been finalized and are ready for signing, a move expected to enhance integration and economic resilience. Now, the ministerial session serves as a precursor for the presidential summit that is scheduled for tomorrow, the 10th of October 2025, where President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwe of Namibia and President Advocate Duma Boko of Botswana will co-chair the proceeding. The presidential summit will review the recommendations from the ministerial discussions and chart the strategic direction for future cooperation. Now, the Namibia-Botswana Binational Commission underscores the enduring spirit of regional solidarity and pan-African cooperation as both Namibia and Botswana continue to work closely within the frameworks of SADC and the African Union, promoting peace, stability, and economic integration in Southern Africa. Now let's take a listen to Botswana's President of International Relations, that is Phenyo Buthelezi.
Honorable Co-Chair, the establishment of this structured bilateral mechanism signifies our shared recognition of the remarkable growth of our bilateral cooperation since the establishment of diplomatic relations between our countries in 1990. This framework offers an invaluable opportunity to deliberate on bilateral, regional, and global issues of mutual interest. It also allows us to explore further avenues for deepening cooperation in critical sectors of our economies, including trade and investment, tourism, cultural linkages, as well as the promotion of exchanges in science, education, technology, and other technical fields. Notably, initiatives such as the Trans-Kalahari Mamuno One-Stop Border Post, the use of identity cards, travel documents, the driver facility at well display, the twinning agreement between local districts, the relocation of Botswana of Namibian descent, and the proposed Trans-Kalahari Railway project have emerged as significant opportunities to enhance and deepen bilateral cooperation between Botswana and Namibia. There is also strong collaboration in border security, transboundary water management, environment conservation, wildlife management, agriculture, trade, tourism, and energy. To date, a total of 47 memoranda of understanding and agreements across various sectors have been signed between Botswana and Namibia. I'm pleased to note that notable progress has been made in the implementation of several of these instruments. Honorable Co-Chair, while we celebrate these milestones, a number of instruments of cooperation remain under negotiation and require further progress. I therefore encourage our stakeholders to use this session as an opportunity to conclude these negotiations. I'm also pleased to note that 8 instruments in the fields of energy, technology, elections and business, as well as labor and productivity, are ready to be signed during this session. Co-Chair, beyond our bilateral cooperation, our two countries continue to work together to advance our common position and shared interests on the international stage. In this regard, I wish to take this opportunity to appreciate the sustained collaboration between our countries at SADC, African Union, and the just ended United Nations General Assembly in advancing peace, prosperity, and security both within our region and beyond. I further applaud the government of the Republic of Namibia for their continued commitment to advancing the Women, Peace, and Security agenda through the International Women Peace Center hosted here in Benin. I understand this initiative is your brainchild stemming from the tenure in New York. In the same spirit, I wish to commend your diligent work in advancing the adoption of the groundbreaking UN Security Council Resolution 1825 of 2000, which recognizes the critical role of women in the prevention and resolution of conflicts, peace building, and post-conflict reconstruction. Congratulations are indeed well deserved. That's the point where you clap. Honorable Minister and Co-Chair, our senior officials have met over the past 3 days to prepare a comprehensive report for the session. Prior to this, a midterm review of the inaugural session of the BNC was held in Gaborone in July 2024. Today, we will review the senior officials' report assessing the progress achieved in implementing the agreements and commitments of the previous session, aligning policies and priorities with those of our current administrations, and ensuring that the recommendations for KUMU's do chart the way forward and have tangible impacts. The report we submit to our heads of state tomorrow should be thorough, objective and forward-looking, demonstrating concrete progress and offering well-considered recommendations to guide the next phase of our bilateral cooperation. With these few remarks, allow me once again to express my sincere gratitude for the very warm welcome extended to us and for the excellent facilities made available. I look forward to a fruitful discussion. I also look forward to hosting you in Gaborone for the third session of the Botswana Namibia Binational Commission. I thank you very much for coming.
Now that I also caught up with economist Dr. Omu Kakrematundu to find out on what Namibia and Botswana are in for it. But before we get to that, let's step away for a scheduled commercial break and then we'll get right into it. Stay tuned.
Usave's combo for just 99 Namibian dollars is so popular that we gladly repeat it. Hurry to get yours. All your essential products for just 99 Namibian dollars. 1 kilogram each of Rice King rice, Top Score or Bokoma Super Maize meal, Sugar King white or brown sugar, 500 grams Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliter Right Brand sunflower seed oil. That's 5 products for only 99 Namibian dollars. We all save at Usave.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Hey, very good afternoon to you, Dr. Omuka Koyamatundu, and welcome to On the Radio News Analysis yet again.
Good afternoon, Happy, and thank you for having me.
Dr. Omu, Namibia and Botswana are co-hosting the Binational Commission, BNC, that is taking place today and also the presidential one taking place tomorrow. Now, just exactly what day would you say is the Binational Commission and what does Namibia and Botswana have in it for them?
Yes. The bilateral commission, it means the two countries will come together and they will have on the table a lot of things from politics to economics that they want to cooperate on. Now, when it comes to my area of economics, one could say, if you look at what we have started with Botswana, is very, very great. The first thing that we started with Botswana was basically to give to Botswana what we call a dry dock at in Walvis Bay, meaning that they can offload their goods at that dry dock that will be ferried to Botswana by road. So that is a very great idea. We have been in that agreement for a very long time now. So, and it yields good economic benefits for both countries and also good neighborly relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, as we have also heard, you remember they are trying to lay like from Mamuno or from Khansi to either Walvis Bay, they are trying to lay a rail road that is for those goods to be ferried by rail.
Mm-hmm.
Also a great idea that has also, that has been signed. If you look at other things that one could think of is where we are now traveling to Botswana without a need of a passport. As long as you have your new ID, you just jump into your car and you go to Botswana. It is hassle-free. It is you don't need to go to this office to apply for a passport.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you are living somewhere in ASAP or in GAM.
Mm-hmm.
You just take your ID and go.
Yeah.
So the other things that they could perhaps look at, we don't know what is in that 49-point agenda of theirs,
mm-hmm.
but one thing that we could also look at, you see, when you look at Namibia and Botswana, we are very small markets. Now, not only small markets, but also a very small manufacturing base. If the two countries can have joint ventures where they could pull money together, establish a factory in Namibia or in Botswana, where they will have what we call economies of scale, or that scale to export to other African countries using the African Continental Free Trade Area.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't do so, we'll just sign those African Continental, we have signed, we have ratified it, but selling to the other African countries will be very difficult because we don't have anything to show. So it will be very difficult, very, very important for them to join, to have that. We have also other areas where they can cooperate, like Botswana is big in diamond mining. So they could also learn from Botswana and they could do things together there. It comes when it comes to livestock, it is the same thing. They could also cooperate and see how they could protect rat fence between us and Botswana, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to, we are not privy now to what is in the 49 points,
yeah.
But I think those are some of the things where we have already started operationalizing those things, like the dry dock, the going to Botswana with only an ID,
mm-hmm.
knowing that they are trying to lay a railway to Valfes and the like.
Mm.
So I think that is a great idea.
Okay. Now, Dr. Omu, what sectors do you believe hold the greatest potential for collaboration between Botswana and Namibia?
I am not very sure, as I'm not a business person, but one of the sectors, of course, could be value addition to livestock products or agricultural products, if I may say so. Be it in, they are in sorghum, we are also in sorghum. If we can, if we want to set up either in Namibia or Botswana,
mm-hmm.
a big, what is it, Mahangu cookies factory or so. The same thing with maybe hides, where we can have tanneries together. So I think in agriculture, definitely, it holds a lot of promises. The president will always tell you that those are some of the low-hanging fruits where we can add value. But if we stand alone, like Namibia or Botswana, we can add value. But our goods won't be competitive because our scale will be very
limited.
Very small, limited, that's the word. And then our goods are going to be very expensive. But if we have that scale, that is enjoying some economies of scale, then definitely we can lower the cost and we can export to any country,
mm-hmm.
be it the U.S., China, or, as I have said, to our African brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. Now, you spoke about the railway in Walvis Bay. Just how important is regional transport connectivity, I mean, such as road and the railway, energy corridors, in order for them to help boost trade efficiency between Namibia and Botswana?
Good that you have mentioned the corridors. Look, goods are transported by road now, and those big trucks are destroying our roads. They are hazards to me and you. But besides that, what we hear from the people in the know, they are telling us that because you cannot ferry huge cargo or freight by road, the railroad is going to offer some efficient and cost-effective transport.
Yeah.
So you are very right. If we can lay that railroad from, let's say, Khansi or Lubatse to Walvis Bay, it will minimize not only the cost to the companies, but also will eliminate the damage to the roads as well as road safety, improving road safety.
Mm-hmm. Now, what risks or challenges should both nations be mindful of as they deepen their economic ties?
Definitely, they should not go for what we call white elephants. Mm. They get excited over a project without going into serious economic analysis, which involves financial and economic analysis, looking at the numbers as well as looking at the spill over effects with positive benefits that the two nations can derive. And then what we have seen is that if they get excited and start something, because it's a pet project of the Botswana president or the Namibian president, they want it to be started and then it collapses, that will be very, very bad idea. We want them to go seriously in trying to look at the viability of those joint ventures or businesses so that they can serve as a demonstration that it can be done. Now, if they start something and it closes tomorrow, then business people and everyone else will be skeptical to start those joint ventures. So whatever project you are going into, you should, businesses can fail, but they fail more often because we haven't done our homework.
True. Now, President Duma Boko of Botswana has countless times in his interviews spoken about diversifying Botswana's economy and also stepping away from heavy reliance on the diamond sector. And I think one of those could be because of the way the economy is going lately, and also because of the increase of lab-grown diamonds. Just what particular angle would you say perhaps Botswana may be looking into as they intend on diversifying their economy?
I'm not very sure, but what you have stated about the diamonds, you are very right, because we have seen 2 months ago or so, Botswana ran out of drugs, not coke. I mean,
medicine.
Medicines for hospitals, yeah? And the reason that Boko was telling us is that it is just because of the diamond industry going down. They facing the synthetic diamonds, etc. So I'm not very sure. I can't tell you just on top of my mind what that diversification means. But as I have warned, Botswana is a very small country. Unless they get something like some big investors coming from outside to go in, I don't know, some value addition of some kind, I don't know in what, they should try and see how they can work with other countries like Namibia, Zambia, etc., to set up bigger factories that will have that scale, as we have said before.
Interesting. Yep. Thank you so much, Dr. Omokatko Matundu, for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you so much, Happy Juju, and thank you for having me. Bye.
Okay, bye.
And there you had it. Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. But you know, this is on the Reading News Analysis. We're just midway and halfway there. Stay tuned for more.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Reading News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. In September 2025, Namibia's headline annual inflation rate stood at 3.5%. The primary contributors to this rate were, as according to NSA, Namibia Statistics Agency, food and non-alcoholic beverages, which added 1.1 percentage point, housing, water, electricity, gas and other fuels, contributing 0.9 percentage points, and alcoholic beverages and tobacco, contributing 0.7 percentage points. The highest year-on-year inflation increases were recorded in alcoholic beverages and tobacco at 4.9%, food and non-alcoholic beverages at 4.9%, education at 4.3%, hotels, cafes and restaurants at 4.2%, and recreation and culture at 4.0%. On housing, water, electricity, gas and other fuels, this category carries the largest weight in the consumer basket, accounting for 28.4% of total household expenditure. Now, in September 2025, the annual inflation rate for this division stood at 3.6%, slightly slower than the 3.7% recorded in September 2024. Now, on a monthly basis, the category recorded a modest 0.2% increase, following a 0.1% rise in the preceding month. For food and non-alcoholic beverages, representing 16.5% of the Namibia Consumer Price Index basket, food and non-alcoholic beverages posted an annual inflation rate of 4.9% in September 2025, a slight deceleration from 5.1% observed in September 2024. Now, on a monthly basis, prices in this category remained unchanged at 0.0% after a 0.2% decline in August 2025. Now, within this category, food alone makes up 14.8% of the total consumer basket. The most heavily weighed subcategories include bread and cereal at 4.8%, meat at 3.5%, sugar, jam, honey, syrups, chocolate and confectionery at 1.4%, vegetables at 1.2%, and milk, cheese and eggs at 1.2%. While coffee, tea and cocoa, the annual inflation rate for this subcategory slowed to 5.9% in September 2025 compared to 10.8% a year earlier. The deceleration was mainly reflected in the falling prices of chocolate drinks at 14.1% to 4.2% and tea from 10.4% to 1.7%. Now, sugar, jam, honey, syrups, chocolate and confectionery, inflation dropped to 2.6% from 6.6% in September 2024. The slowdown was driven by notable price decreases in honey at minus 5.1%, sweets at 2.5%, syrup at minus 0.8% and jam at 1.4%. Now, other food products, the annual inflation rate eased to 2.7% from 5.8% the previous year. The decline stemmed from lower prices for bottled baby food at minus 4.1%, ready-made frozen food at 1.4%, soups, at 1.0% and sauce at 0.6%. Milk, cheese and eggs, this category recorded a deflation of 1.5% in September 2025 compared to a 6.6% increase in September 2024. Now, this drop was largely influenced by price contractions in fresh and long life milk at minus 4.4% and cream at minus 3.1%, cheese at 0.7% and baby powder at minus 1.9%. Now, in summary, while inflation in September 2025 remained moderate at 3.5%, price movements within key food and housing categories reflected a general easing trend compared to the previous year, primarily due to subdued price pressures across several essential goods and services.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has just released the latest inflation report that is for the month of September 2025, whereby the headline annual inflation rate stood at 3.5%, slightly higher than the 3.4% recorded in September 2024. On a monthly basis, inflation stayed unchanged at 0%, the same as the rate recorded in the previous month. Looking at the zonal inflation rates for September 2025, revealed that Zone 1, which is Kavango East, Kavango West, Kunene, Ohangwena, Omsati, Oshana, Oshkoto, Otshodonjupa, and Zambezi, recorded the highest annual inflation rate at 3.8%. This was followed by Zone 3, which includes Karas, Erongo, Hardap, and Omaheke at 3.4%. While Zone 2, representing the Commerce region, recorded the lowest rate at 3.2%. An analysis of average retail prices for selected products in September 2025 revealed that consumers in Zone 2 paid the highest price for biltong at $568.16 per kilogram, followed by Zone 1 at $532.93, while the lowest price was paid by Zone 3 consumers at $416.51 per kilogram.
And with that, we pause right here now, and we'll be back shortly right after this commercial break. Stay tuned.
Lipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabu ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatimwe mbali hea hi nola natu heali bali no hea ile konderewa mbira hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back.
Now, President Duma Boko has arrived in Namibia, that is for the street renaming ceremony, Fred Strauss, in honor of His Excellency Celeste Kammer, founding president of the Republic of Botswana. Now, joining me in studio now to discuss on the importance of this is Lydia Mtenga, spokesperson for the city of Windhoek. A very good afternoon, ma'am, and welcome to On the Reading's Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon to the listeners, and yes, I'm happy to be here.
Ms. Lydia, just tell us just how important and the significance of the renaming of the street in honor of a former president of Botswana.
Yes, it's an exciting moment for Namibia and obviously for Botswana and absolutely for the region or the southern region, probably the whole Africa or the world, because we are recognizing our own. The renaming of Cell Street to say Serete Kama Street gives an effect to a decision that was initially approved by council in 1997, and then it was later reinforced by a formal application by the Maharero Loyal Authority in 2015. Mm-hmm. And thereafter, council had to do another resolution for 2018 that is now giving us an opportunity to host this ceremony. So the renaming honors the enduring historical as well as regional ties between Namibia and Botswana, and also celebrates the late Sir Seretse Khama's profound contribution to the liberation and the development of Southern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
As many will know, he was the architect in the formulation or the foundation of the Southern African Development Community, SADC. So he played a very huge role, of which many countries, including Namibia, are proud of. And for the renaming ceremony, is really that gesture to just appreciate our own. So coming back to the questions on this specific street, Felt Street is a street found in Windhoek in Aswan Plus area. It's approximately 850 meters long. And it holds both symbolic and locational significance within Sendouk. So it's situated in an area where several streets bear the names of prominent African leaders, such as Julius Nyerere, Jan Janssen, Afrikaner. And it's reflecting on a broader theme of celebrating leadership and African heritage in this specific area. So it is proximity to major intersection named, namely Sam Nujoma, Kenneth Kaunda, Robert Mugabe, and Nelson Mandela. So if you look at the theme, it's deliberate. And it's really deliberate to the fact that we are reinforcing this legacy in this specific area of Sendouk. So renaming Fell Street after His Excellency Sir Seretse Khama therefore aligns with the city's tradition of honoring figures whose leadership shaped Southern Africa. And Botswana's founding president is a key architect on the formation of Southern African Development Community, as I mentioned earlier. Sir Seretse Khama's legacy of unity, peace and regional cooperation continue to definitely inspire both Namibia and the region at large.
Very interesting. Now, I did see a comment on your Facebook as you placed it up. One of the residents of Botswana residents right here in Windhoek did ask, is it open to the public? Am I allowed to go? Can I be there? Or is
It's an event. It's a public event. However, because of the organizing and the protocols involved, as we speak now, you see the movement is a bit restricted because the event is starting in the next few, about around 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It starts exactly at 2:15. So unfortunately, that might affect a lot of those that would have wanted to just walk in and participate because of the restrictions of movements. As I said, it's a public event, it's an event for the people. But you also have to take into cognizance that there is protocol that we need to observe as we have two head of states that are attending this event. And of obviously the former president of Botswana, who is also in attendance. It's a bit tight in terms of that, but it's a public event. However, they are not left behind because there is live streaming that is taking place for the people to follow the proceedings. NBC, our national broadcaster, is going to be there live, as well as the Minister of Information and Communication Technology will definitely also be there live. And you can also follow on the City of Sendouk page live while the event is taking place. So we made it deliberate to diversify the platforms so that nobody is left out who wants to follow. And if you are not, you have not followed the exact proceeding as it's happening now, you can always go back even tomorrow in the afternoon over the weekend and you can go through and listen and at your own comfort to be able to follow what was happening.
Just lastly, Ms. Leah, before I do let you go, just how significant are events such as this, renaming a street to a particular icon who has played really their role and an important role in just not their, for the benefit of their own country, but for the benefit of many countries and on this particular story, for the benefit of SADC, of which Namibia is also very much benefiting in that angle. Just how significant is for that? You know, how does that help maybe strengthen ties between two countries and further open doors for collaboration, not just between, from Namibia's angle itself, but also within the borders of Botswana themselves?
Yes, I have traveled, but maybe not so well in the region and outside. But you will see that we have similar way of doing things in Africa, if not in the region, where you find in many countries you have streets named after either some members of the public or public figures in other countries, in various countries as well. So it's not an isolated initiative.
Incident, yeah.
But as for Sendouk, specifically, the organization I speak on behalf of, is that this is a process that has been, that is very significant and is prioritized up to the level of council, because the street and place naming guidelines that is guiding these initiatives and this type of naming and renaming of streets and places is approved by council. It's a resolution of council. And there is a committee or heritage committee that actually look at some of these things, are happening and spearheading some of these initiatives and events. So that there is a committee called Streets and Place Naming and or Renaming Committee that also have certain criteria that are under the place naming guidelines, and that they are the ones that are looking at certain aspects when an application like this comes in. They are looking at issues like historical significance, cultural, geographical, or national significance. So it's rooted in that approval or in that guideline that we are appreciating our own. When I started my interview, I said we are appreciating our own. Botswana is our neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And not just our neighbor. We are linked to Botswana in so many ways. So this is also an opportunity for us to reflect on that and to appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So when Namibians are in Botswana or people from Botswana in Namibia, you are always feeling home away from home.
Mm.
And not only because you are sharing the border, but because you feel you are appreciated. You go in the streets and you can relate. You can, you know, look at the street names and you know you are like at home. So these are the types of things that we do to create and to promote peace, unity, not only in the region, but I mean everywhere we go. Namibians, we are known to be warm, you know, inviting, very happy people. And when we do such things, people come to Namibia and they wonder, it's like I met you yesterday, it's like I know you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this type of initiatives that Council of Windhoek has put in place. It's this type of initiatives that we are appreciating. It's this type of initiatives that we need to promote. Again, as I mentioned, this specific renaming ceremony, it's really promoting our relationship with Botswana and celebrating the late Sir Seretse Khama's profound contribution to the liberation and development of Southern Africa.
Mm-hmm. I can only imagine how people from Botswana coming and actually seeing the name of Sir Seretse and feeling really welcomed and feeling at home. But thank you so much.
Interesting. So if you look at that same surrounding, we recently, many few years ago, we had the late president of Tanzania coming to Namibia to attend the official renaming ceremony of Julius Nyerere Street. It's exactly the same feel, and that's exactly where we are taken today. It's almost in the same surrounding when we officially had the Julius Nyerere Street being put up and named in that street.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see it's a continuation of things that we do at the city of Windhoek, and they are culminating in some of these huge events of very significant, profound significance that you can see. Quite a lot of people attending this event, high profile figures, and also the general
senior officials and ministers,
and the general members of the public who are the users of these streets on a daily basis that are also going to be following the proceedings on our social media platform to be part and parcel of this event. I think we just need to learn to be patriotic and appreciate what we are trying to achieve as a country, obviously as a city, as a country, as a region, as a continent, and then we stand out to the world.
Absolutely.
But if we are not patriotic and we are not appreciating what we are ourselves are doing, nobody is going to do it for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Absolutely. Lady Amtenya, thank you so much for making time for us right here and also educating us, giving us more of what actually is on ground. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day ahead.
Okay.
Bye.
And there you had it from Lydia Amtenya. Also, just giving up some bit of a background on who Seretse Khama, I hope I'm actually pronouncing that right. If not, pardon me. Who he is and his contribution to Southern Africa. And of course, why such incidences are very significant and important. And I would just want to add to that, it also helps to promote tourism. It also helps to promote our neighbors to themselves to come and see our beautiful country and see how we embrace them as well and appreciate them so that they can honestly feel at home, away from home. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Before you know it, we'll be back. Now, should you also want to partake in the news bulletin, 0832-888-401 is the number in studio.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask what's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relation, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The African Union Commission and the United Nations Development Programme have launched a landmark report that defines how Africa approaches social protection, placing communities at the center of resilience and development. Now, the launch of the groundbreaking joint report titled From the Ground Up, Community-Based Social Protection in Africa is a report that was unveiled during the AU Symposium on Social Protection in Africa held in Windhoek, Namibia from the 7th to the 8th of October 2025. The publication highlights that Africa's strongest social safety net lies not in formal systems, but in its communities through long-standing traditions of Ubuntu, solidarity, and mutual aid that protect millions from poverty, crisis, and exclusion. Now, according to Dr. Matthias Nab, director of the UNDP Regional Service Center for Africa, supporting community-based social protection organizations does more than provide safety nets. It strengthens resilience, promotes equity, and accelerates progress toward the Sustainable Development Goals and Agenda 2063. Now, the report identifies CBSPOs such as rotating saving groups, burial societies, and labor-sharing associations as key lifelines across continent, with formal social protection systems covering only about 17% of Africa's population. Now, those community groups serve as the backbone of informal communities, particularly supporting women and young people. Key findings show that CPBPOs fill critical gaps left by formal systems, empower women, adapt quickly to shocks such as economic or climate crisis, and strengthen trust inclusion within communities. However, despite their importance, they still remain under-recognized, under and under-supported. Now, the report calls on African governments to mitigate or to integrate these community mechanisms into national policies, linking local realities with broader state frameworks. The symposium themed Building Sustainable Social Protection Systems in Africa, Frameworks, Financing and Accountability, brought together representatives from AU member states, UN agencies, regional blocs and civil society to explore ways to improve funding, digital delivery and accountability in social protection. The AUC also inaugurated a technical working group on social protection, which will coordinate regional collaboration and knowledge sharing ahead of the Second World Summit for Social Development set for November 2025. Now, speaking at the launch also is Dr. Sabelo Mbokazi, the AUC's head of labor employment and migration, who stressed that the CBSPOs are not informal alternatives, but proven institutions that manage risk and deliver support where government programs have limited reach. And also concluding the event, Dr. Nab reaffirmed the report's message, saying, Resilience does not begin in boardrooms of ministries. It begins in communities. And if we are serious about building inclusive systems, we must start from the ground up. And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with more right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Of course, $1 today is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 11 cents, while 1 euro is equals to 19 Namibian dollars and 87 cents. 1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 21 cents, and 1 Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 37 cents. 1 pound sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 89 cents. 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. Now moving over to trading economics. Manufacturing output in South Africa fell by 1.5% year-on-year in August 2025, extending a revised 1.3% decline in the prior month. The largest negative contributions came from the basic iron steel, non-ferrous metal products and metal products and machinery division, which fell 5.9%, subtracting 1.3 percentage points, and the food and beverages division, which declined 3.0%, shaving 0.7% of the index. Now, on a seasonally adjusted monthly basis, industrial output rose by 0.4% in August after a revised 0.8% decrease in the previous month. Seasonally adjusted manufacturing production increased by 1.5% in the 3 months ended August 2025 compared with the previous 3 months. Industrial production in Ireland surged by 25% year-on-year in August 2025, accelerating sharply from an upwardly revised 10.5% gain in the previous month. Now, the latest figure marked the strongest growth since May, as output increased at a much faster pace for both manufacturing industries at 24.4% versus 8.6% in July, and transportable goods at 25.8% versus 10.6%. Now, on the other hand, production moderated for electricity, gas, steam, and air conditioning supply at 5.1% versus 13.1%. Now, on a monthly basis, industrial production climbed to a 3-month high of 9.8% in August from 0.5% in the previous month. The annual inflation rate in Greece rose to 1.9% in September 25, slowing from 2.9% in the previous month. Now, this marked the lowest reading since September 2023, driven largely by lower price growth in most sub-indices such as food and non-alcoholic beverages. Now, that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. We pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. When written, we'll tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, at this juncture, we tell you what's making headline in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. We start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, starting off in South Africa, whereby they are talking about the state of South Africa's road infrastructure. Let's take a listen.
African National Roads Agency Limited says over 35,000 job opportunities were created for previously disadvantaged individuals, including the youth and women, to work on its road infrastructure projects. Now, the Government Road Agency presented its 2024-2025 annual financial results to Parliament yesterday. It also announced that it has received an unqualified audit for the 2024-2025 financial year, with a total expenditure exceeding 40 billion rand. For more on this, we are joined by the SANRAL Chief Executive Officer, Reginald Dimana. CEO, great to have you. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program.
Thank you for the invitation, and greetings to you and all your viewers.
Yeah, so, I mean, having a look at the results, I suppose it's an optimistic note to start on, but if we look at some of the challenges that face SANRAL, I gather it's probably the poor state of the road infrastructure in many parts of the country. So let's have a look at the annual results that you announced and sort of addressing the matter of some of these roads.
Yeah, maybe let me start with the state of the roads. You will recall that SANRAL manages just about 27,500 kilometers. That is 4% of South Africa's road network. So it's small in size, but the impact of that 4% is that it carries almost 40% of all traffic on South Africa's roads. And it also carries about 60% to 70% of freight. So that is your long distance trucks and all that. So its impact is huge. And therefore, you will understand that when people complain about the poor state of the roads, it's usually outside of that 4%. Having said that, it's because the coverage of 90%, you can imagine that people feel that. Mm. Obviously, for us, to manage that 4%, which carries a lot of traffic and freight, we spend a lot of money, 40 billion you mentioned. A significant part of that goes into road maintenance as well as some of our capital projects. There are a lot of expansion projects that we are looking at across the major corridors. You look at the N2, N3, for example, in KZN. You look at projects in Gauteng, Moloto Road, N2 in Emelo, in Mpumalanga. So there's quite a lot that's going on, including on the toll projects. And obviously, when we do the work, we employ a lot of people. We've created about 35,000 job opportunities during the year, and including supporting SMMEs wherever we operate. Mm. One of the key features of our project is what we call contract participation goals, in which we try and make sure that 30% of the value of our projects is invested in local communities, or at least supports local communities and SMMEs. So that does help bring about economic change, economic impact,
wherever we operate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really, in short, the results. You did mention we achieved an unqualified audit for the year.
Yeah.
That was very important.
Yeah.
But another milestone we achieved very early on last year in April was we finally ended e-tolls. With that, we unlocked borrowing limits for the toll. So now we are able to go and borrow money to implement our toll project. And the first loan we concluded recently was with the National Development Bank, the so-called BRICS Bank, to support our toll portfolio.
So, I mean, there certainly are many issues to get into, and I know, you know, upfront congratulating you for those unqualified results, because it is it's an important aspect of reporting, and as you say, you know, that is exactly what is needed. But let's have a look, and I want to delve a little into these job opportunities, and we speak about job opportunities, but beyond these short-term jobs, have you managed to create proper employment, you know, long-term employment for those that have been involved in all of this?
Yeah, I think construction by its very nature is never really a long-term permanent employment type of industry or sector. So it's always cyclical. Some projects will be a few months. Some could take 2 to 3 years. So our projects in general will run from 2 to 4 years. So it's always like that. Unfortunately, that's the type of sector.
Mm.
What we do is the Department of Labor does give you a conversion you can use from 35,000 job opportunities. You probably get to somewhere in the region of 15,000 full-time equivalent. So there is a conversion that you use. What is important for us is that there are a lot of people unemployed out there. So the more opportunities we create, we train them, we give them exposure, they are able to take those skills and go elsewhere. Some people continue to work on these projects, so from project to project, for many years. But that's really the type of sector that we have.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Zambia Sustainable Wildlife Management Legal Hub has been launched.
Minister of Tourism Rodin Sikumba says the launch of the Sustainable Wildlife Management Legal Hub will provide a critical platform for decision-making and policy development. Speaking during the launch, Mr. Sikumba stressed that Sustainable Wildlife Management Legal Hub will also promote practices that benefit both wildlife and communities.
The established Legal Hub will serve as a critical resource for stakeholders across various sectors, including wildlife, land, food, safety, animal production and health, environment, forestry and tourism. Further, it will provide a platform for informed decision-making, policy development, and the promotion of practices that benefit both our wildlife and our communities.
And speaking earlier, Food and Agriculture Organization FAO noted that the Legal Hub will serve as an important resource for government, policymakers, and development partners.
It will serve as a valuable resource for government officials, policymakers, researchers, development partners, and community representatives, all those who work to ensure that wildlife management contributes to both conservation and human well-being.
Today, we celebrate more than just the launch of the digital platform. We celebrate a new way of empowering communities, policymakers, academia, and practitioners to protect biodiversity while also safeguarding food security and livelihoods for future generations.
Meanwhile, the Attorney General says the launch of the Centralized Sustainable Wildlife Management Legal Hub will make the law accessible to all.
Sustainable Wildlife Management Legal Hub has therefore been created as a centralized platform to make the law accessible to all, as it provides guidance, strengthens compliance, and ensures that government authorities, communities, and private stakeholders understand their rights.
At the same event, National Parks and Wildlife Director appealed to the Attorney General to consider establishing a fast-track wildlife court.
We are appealing to the office if we can have a wildlife court, fast-track court, or environmental court, which will expedite the cases involving environmental crimes.
For Zanis, I'm Lakshman Makodza.
Zambia reaffirms commitment to reviving cotton sector on World Cotton Day.
Cotton is one of the most common fabrics in our wardrobes. However, it represents so much more than a commodity as it provides a major source of income for many smallholder farmers. Speaking at the commemoration of the 2025 World Cotton Day, Minister of Agriculture, Ruben Mutolo, says the Zambian cotton sector directly and indirectly employs about 350,000 Zambians. The minister was represented by the ministry's permanent secretary for Tekenco Services, John Mlongoti.
Cotton is not just a cash crop. It's a livelihood that supports thousands of smallholder farmers and generates rural employment. Across our cotton value chain, the sector directly and indirectly employs over 350,000 Zambians, from small-scale producers to textile artisans, transporters and traders.
Meanwhile, His Excellency, the Ambassador of Brazil, Arthur Nogueira, highlighted the successful collaboration between Zambia and Brazil in the cotton sector.
This project is expected to impact approximately 300,000 smallholder farmers. By enhancing productivity, promoting sustainable practices, and strengthening Zambia's cotton value chain, seed distribution, institutional support, and capacity building for technicians and farmers.
The Cotton Board of Zambia and Cotton Development Trust were among the stakeholders in attendance.
This year's celebration fall under the theme, The Fiber of Our Lives. This theme resonates well as 90% of the clothes we are wearing today, that which we have in our wardrobes, are made from cotton.
The Cotton Development Trust will provide latest agricultural technologies, ensure that they are adopted by our farmers. These will assist in increasing yields, reduce expenses.
The 2025 World Cotton Day is being held under the theme, Cotton, the Fabric of Our Lives. Christabel Kanjele reporting in Lusaka.
Oil and gas communities find their voice as for years Africa's natural wealth has fueled global markets, but local communities often see little of the benefit. In Uganda, a citizen-led platform is changing that and giving communities a voice in decisions around oil, gas and minerals and holding governments and investors accountable. Let's take a listen.
Citizens Convention on Extractives has spent the last 8 years bridging the gap between communities, government and the industry. By opening dialogue on investment, responsibilities and transparency, the platform ensures that resource-rich regions don't just host projects but also benefit from them through building local skills, providing business opportunities and having a stronger say in how their resources are used.
So over the years, we noticed that discussions around our oil, our gas and our other natural resources were only in ministries and private sector investors. And yet the benefits and the impacts really that are accruing from the sector go to communities. So when government and investors are planning, they always plan for communities as victims already, like affected persons. They never invest in understanding that this is a community that can actually benefit and grow from the investments. So our planning is always skewed towards making them victims.
Government regulators welcome the citizens' push for dialogue, calling it a healthy check on their work. They say platforms like the Citizens Convention help align policies with their community needs and clear misunderstandings around Uganda's oil and gas projects. Officials add that transparency remains a priority, with key projects like Tilenga, Kingfisher and the East African crude oil pipeline now over 60% complete.
We encourage this kind of citizen manifesto, especially in the extractive industries. We think we have tried to the extent possible to be as transparent as possible. The only thing you will hear every day is about the contracts. There is no country who, those who have been producing for 50, 60 years, whose contracts you find them on the street. The last assessment we went through, international assessment, I think gave us over 85% in respect to transparency. We have several people in different capitals of the world trying to undertake benchmarking this and so on to try and be ready for first oil.
As Uganda's old journey unfolds, one message rings clear. True wealth isn't just beneath the ground, but in the voices that rise to protect it. Betty Ndagire, NTV Business.
Meanwhile, solar and wind surge are set to meet global energy demand in 2025.
A report by think tank Ember has found that for the first time on record, renewable energy sources such as solar, wind, hydropower, bioenergy and geothermal together generated more power than coal. Total fossil fuel generation dropped slightly by less than 1%.
So first half of 2025 saw solar and wind exceeding growth in the electricity demand. That means that they can keep up the pace with growing appetite for the energy, electricity worldwide. So this is important because this indicates that fossil fuels no longer need to grow to meet our appetite for electricity.
Global solar generation expanded by a record 31% in the first half of the year, while wind generation grew by 7.7%. Solar and wind generation increased by more than 400 terawatt hours combined, which was more than the overall global uptake in the same period. Even as demand for electricity skyrockets, the findings suggest it is possible for the world to wean off polluting sources of power with continued investment in key clean energies.
We all want clean, healthy environment for us and generations to come. So this is turning point when we see emissions plateauing. We can expect now them going down. We can expect, you know, end of this fossil fuels growth.
The firm analyzes monthly data from 88 countries representing the vast majority of electricity demand around the world. It says the demand is being driven by economic growth, rising numbers of electric vehicles and data centers, population growth in developing countries, and the need for more cooling as temperatures rise. Beryl Oro, CGTN.
World Trade Organization raises the 2025 global trade growth forecast from 0.9% to 2.4%.
The World Trade Organization on Tuesday said it was sharply raising its forecast for global merchandise trade growth to 2.4% this year. The trade body had last set its prediction at 0.9% as recently as August.
World merchandise trade volume growth came in stronger than expected in the first half of 2025, up 4.9% year on year. We now expect world merchandise trade volumes to expand by 2.4% this year.
Among this year's solid features is trade between developing countries.
South-South trade grew 8% year on year in value terms in the first half of 2025, compared to 6% for world trade overall. Our very rough estimates suggest South-South trade involving partners other than China is growing even faster, up around 9%. With respect to services trade, which continues to outpace trading goods, the new report projects 4.6% growth in 2025 in volume terms.
The organization also attributed the increasing merchandise trade to front-loaded imports in the United States over tariff sphere and AI-related purchases.
The report finds that trade in AI-related goods was a key driver of the strong growth in the first half of 2025, with trade in these products rising 20% year-on-year in value terms, accounting for nearly half of year-on-year increase at the global level, despite representing less than 10% of total merchandise trade. The rise in AI-related trade seems to have been fueled by structural investments in digital infrastructure, from semiconductors to cloud servers.
At the same time, the organization said this trend would slow down in 2026.
Africa faces 1.3 trillion US dollars challenge in order to achieve SDGs, that is according to the African Development Bank.
Nations calls upon countries to achieve 17 sustainable development goals by 2030. In 2015, countries unanimously agreed to ensure that there is no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being, quality education and gender equality, among others, by 2030. 5 years before the agreed time, the African Development Bank Group says Africa needs about $1.3 trillion to meet the Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs.
It is worth noting that Africa's financing needs to meet the SDGs is estimated to be around $1.3 trillion, with an external financing gap worth around half that amount.
Dr. Ta said the meeting's focus is negotiating policy commitments, financing and resource allocation for the 2026-2028 cycle.
This negotiation occurred while Africa stands at a crossroads, navigating a shifting global landscape marked by greater political uncertainty, constrained concessional resources and competition among Asian development priorities.
Meanwhile, Acting Finance and National Planning Minister Charles Melupi called for the collective leveraging of other financing windows under the climate finance space to complement the resources of the African Development Fund.
Harnessing instruments such as the Green Climate Fund, the Global Environment Facility, and other emerging mechanisms will broaden the impact of ADFs. Interventions and help Africa accelerate the transition toward a low carbon and climate resilient development pathway.
Mr. Melupi said Zambia is grateful to the African Development Fund and the African Development Bank Group for its support in key sectors such as energy, agriculture, and infrastructure, which has significantly contributed to national development efforts. Mary Kachepa, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Ethiopia accuses Eritrea of preparing to wage war against it.
Ethiopia has accused Eritrea of preparing to wage war against it in the latest sign of escalating tensions between the two countries over control of the Red Sea. Ethiopian Foreign Minister Gideon Timotheros wrote to the United Nations Secretary General on October 2nd. In his letter, the top diplomat claimed Eritrea was colluding with the Tigray People's Liberation Front, an opposition group based in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region. Ethiopia also accused Eritrea and the TPLF of supporting armed groups in its Amhara region, where the Federal Army has been fighting rebels. Eritrea has not yet commented on the letter. The relationship between the two countries has become increasingly strained in recent months, reviving their shared bloody history. Eritrea took control of the Red Sea coastline when it gained independence from Ethiopia in 1993. The border war that opposed the two countries between 1998 and 2000 killed tens of thousands of people. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed eased lasting tensions when he took office in 2018, but Ethiopia has been pushing to regain access to the Red Sea in recent years, which has strained its relationship with its neighbor. In his letter, the Ethiopian foreign minister said his country hoped to negotiate with the Eritrean government over this issue.
Meanwhile, Israel and Hamas have agreed to the first phase of a peace deal.
A breakthrough in Egypt. U.S. President Donald Trump announces Israel and Hamas have agreed to the first phase of a peace plan, which includes a pause in fighting and the release of some hostages and prisoners. Families in Tel Aviv are overwhelmed with hope. I can't explain what I'm feeling. It's crazy. I don't know what I'll say to him or what I'll do. I will hug him, kiss him, and just tell him I love him, and that's it. To see his eyes looking into my eyes, to see him hugging his sisters, Shani and Natalie. The news also sinking in across Gaza. After 2 years of war, 67,000 people have been killed and famine is spreading. Details of the peace deal remain unclear, but for paramedic Saeed Awad, it's the first real sign of hope in a long time. For sure, it's a feeling of joy. We've been in this war and in this suffering for 2 years. As soon as we heard the news, we didn't believe it because we were so happy. We had to ask for confirmation. Now we wait for the deal to come into effect so that this war and this suffering and ethnic cleansing in Gaza ends.
Israel's cabinet is expected to vote, and after that we're going to have a more clear timeline as to what happens next. But there are still a lot of uncertainties about this deal. It's unclear if Hamas will disarm, a key Israeli demand. It's also unclear who will govern Gaza the day after. But this is a major breakthrough after 2 years of war.
The deal will see Hamas release all 20 living hostages in the coming days, while the Israeli military will begin a withdrawal from the majority of Gaza.
Meanwhile, analysts speaking about on the Gaza peace deal say that the war is far from over.
What we saw announced tonight was specific to the release of hostages and Palestinian prisoners after long and arduous negotiations. I would personally venture out to say that the war is far from over and that we don't know what happens after this phase is over. It is expected that Hamas will produce all living hostages within the time frame. However, the issue is with the deceased hostages who are buried in different locations throughout Gaza. Hamas is not only counting on guarantees from President Trump to pressure Israel and Netanyahu not to restart the war, but they're also imagining and speculating, based on what I've gathered, that with the hostages being out, it's going to be very difficult for Israel to restart the war, that it won't have any legitimacy to re-engage in military operations in the Strip, and that without this cover, without this sense of legitimacy, it would be untenable for Netanyahu and for the Israeli government to re-begin the war, and that this would put it at odds with the international community, but also with President Trump as well. And so that is something that Hamas is counting on to prevent the restarting of the war after giving up all of its chief negotiating leverage.
Ferrari lifts the hood on EV, or that is electrical vehicles technology in maiden electric car.
The iconic Ferrari horse is preparing to shift gears. The Italian luxury sports car maker has unveiled technology which will power its first electric car, the Elettrica. Inside Ferrari's factory in Maranello, the rhythmic clatter of drills and the gleam of red bodywork captures a brand shifting gears between past and future. Ferrari is expected to present the full car next year. With an expected top speed of 193 miles per hour, it's slightly slower than most of its engined models. It will have an amplified sound of its powertrain vibrations to replicate the throaty engine roar. Like other high-performance brands, Ferrari has been cautious about electrification.
To understand,
Reuters reported in June that it had delayed a second EV model until 2028 because of a lack of demand. Rival Lamborghini delayed its EV model until 2029, saying the market isn't ready. Luxury automaker Porsche forged ahead, though. But it's been caught between a crowded Chinese market and Western buyers who still want Porsche's loud combustion engines. Ferrari aims to have a fifth of its model lineup fully electric by 2030. That's well below the 40% target it set in its business plan 3 years ago. But Ferrari is under less pressure than mainstream automakers to go electric, ahead of a 2035 EU ban on new fossil fuel car sales. It can sell combustion engine models running on expensive synthetic e-fuels its customers can afford.
Bitcoin highs record power consumption.
From Bitcoin hitting an all-time high to record power consumption, this is Crypto Weekly. Bitcoin hit a new record high as it rose to just over $126,000. Institutional investors have fueled the rally since the start of the year, and it's seen pro-crypto policies under US President Donald Trump. Bitcoin is also increasingly connected with global financial systems. The owner of the New York Stock Exchange is moving into prediction markets. International Exchange said it will invest as much as $2 billion into crypto-based predictions firm Polymarket. It will use Polymarket's event-driven data to provide sentiment indicators on relevant market topics. The two companies also aim to collaborate on future tokenization initiatives. US power consumption will hit record highs this year and next. That's according to the country's Energy Information Administration, as it laid out its short-term energy outlook. The demand increase comes in part from data centers dedicated to AI and cryptocurrency. The European Union's financial risk watchdog called for urgent safeguards on stablecoins, only partly issued in the bloc. The EU has one of the world's strictest regimes on crypto assets, but policymakers worry issuers originating from outside the bloc enjoy easier regulation and could import financial risk.
Arson suspect has been charged in connection with a deadly Palisades fire in Southern California.
Breaking news out of California right now. Officials are giving an update after announcing an arrest in the deadly Palisades fire.
Unda kalahandu ya kopa rate za kumuro e data. Paife, ohanjimo kuyadi. Nundaka, ne data, no shoyo o utumaraka vahupi. Onetwe kaimwe, okufutarumwe, okuyinyengarumwe, okujapandali. Fio papa, ndauka. Onda pumga onetwe kaoyo, hai jira jira, ya fange. Omafikwa amwe, ohandi streaming. Omafikwa amwe, ohandi popi. Omafikwa amwe, ohandi nigaishe, poshikanto shimwe. Pamwina parateza, uinda holora, amea ishipangere, osho, paumwini. Dira dira, umakota fanoni, data, momkaro wiri, mwana parika, ukutuma kutumaraka, ukustreaminga, na ukudenga pamwina parates. Konga, parates, Namibia.
Always
With that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Now do stay tuned for the Voters Education, Voters Preparation Program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katenda. From me, Dafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Thursday ahead.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ipurane ngeno wapungwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewetike ko vanu hile ko shiwana.
Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association is hosting its elective annual general meeting on the 5th of November this year? Nominations are now open and will be closing on 13 October 2025. All fully paid up alumni members are eligible to be nominated. To qualify, a fellow alumni must nominate you, and your nomination must be seconded by 2 paid up alumni members of the association. Now to submit your nomination form, visit the alumni tab on the UNAM website and click on Alumni AGM Nomination. Don't miss your chance to lead.
Lipurane ngeno wapungwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewetike ko vanu hile ko shiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya ko vanu. Okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitida oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. Mune uto otukwetida o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi kayo loka. Okoni ushe njife nawa nokumuna oijabu hili nawa. Ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onmora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa mura etatu natu bali o etatu batatu oma felane Eagle FM.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Umsea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.5. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.